I'm Matchmaker Maria, the founder of Agape Match. For over a decade, I've combined four generations of family matchmaking tradition with modern relationship psychology, behavioral science, and dating trends. With this unique expertise, I answer your dating and relationship questions and interview experts to give you the tools to find or keep the love of your life. This is Ask a Matchmaker. Welcome to the Ask a Matchmaker podcast. I'm your host, Matchmaker Maria, and do I have the guest of guests, Jordana Abraham, the founder of Betches and the host of the You Up podcast, Oversharing podcast, and At Betches podcast. Jordana, welcome to the Ask a Matchmaker podcast.
Thank you so much for having me. I'm so excited to be here. I feel like our audiences really like overlap and have a similar sensibility.
Oh yeah, let's hope.
Right.
Let's hope. Also, I just realized this is our first time meeting in person.
In person. Yeah, it's crazy.
How weird is that?
I know. You're taller than I thought. You get that a lot?
Yes, I do. But you're like my height, I think.
I'm wearing heels.
Oh, so. I'm not wearing, I'm flats right
now. Okay. Yeah. But it's great to meet you in person. I love your advice.
But it's so crazy though. Like, I feel like we've had a relationship for
years. Right. That's why I was like, I didn't even remember. I was like, have we met in person? It feels like we have. But then I was like, I think it was virtual.
I think it was probably just a parasocial relationship. And also like the DMs.
Yes.
Like you telling me that I've taught you more about Christmas than your actual Christian husband.
Yeah. He's not that good with like the
Epiphany.
Exactly.
Bullshit.
Yeah. I don't know any of it. All I know is presents and trees and Santa. I get the real story from
you. Yeah. The real Santa.
Exactly.
Like that Santa's real. Do you... I have a funny Betches anecdote for you that I was thinking about this morning in preparation for today.
Okay.
A guy broke up with me. Like, we were dating briefly. Okay. Because
a very long time ago.
I
assume, right?
When did Betches begin?
2011.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So I was dating a guy who I guess maybe he knew you or he knew someone on your team. And
okay.
They were like, oh, my friend, I guess there was like a launch party or something. Something had happened. He's like,
book
I went
party,
to this thing.
Probably.
Huh?
Book party, probably.
Maybe.
Yeah.
And he's like, he used the word Betches. And I was like, what is Betches?
What did you call me? Right.
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 And yeah, essentially. And he was like, you don't know what the word betch means? And I was like, no, like I can probably understand it because I'm a millennial.
Right.
Like I can fill in the blanks, but like, what's your attitude about?
That's so funny.
And he's like, you're just not as cool as I thought you were.
Oh, wow.
And I was just like, what is happening? I was like, we're good.
You're
dude.
Not as
then,
cool as I thought you were. That's
yeah.
crazy.
I was like, okay. I'm going to go to
so
work
it didn't
now.
Work out.
No.
Yeah.
No, I left.
Was
it.
That so you broke
it was
up
at his apartment?
Did like, you break up over Betches?
Yeah.
Wow.
I think about that all the time.
That's so, I mean, that is like that's a memorable imprint if.
Yeah, because I was like, who the fuck is Betches? Like, why?
Right, plus that was like early. Like
it's
we
also like 8 a.m.
Yeah.
Like, we're getting ready for work. I'm leaving. Why are we
but
talking
like,
about this?
That's like a rude thing to say is like, you're not as cool as I thought you were. Like,
oh, yeah.
What does that even mean? Who's heard of anything? Again, like my husband doesn't even know like what the origin stories of Christmas is. Like, is that
bad
uncool?
Christian.
Yeah. Who's to say what's cool or not cool?
No, I just remember that conversation so well. And then suddenly, you know, Betches became this incredible thing that you've built with other people.
Thank you.
And yeah. I've been following the success, but it's always like, oh, damn it, man.
Yeah. Like, well, if you're listening, I'm sure he's listening.
He's definitely watching this.
Jokes on you.
Yeah.
Messed out.
Now she's on my couch. Not
exactly.
You. All right. Anyway. So tell me a little bit more about lately you've. Okay. So married life.
Married life.
Yes.
Yeah. I've been married 2 years now, a little over 2 years.
Yeah.
Yeah. I love married life. It's funny. Like I always thought like married life is way better than engaged life.
In what way?
Because engaged life is like you're like have to be working on this project together and it's so
big party.
It's so stressful and it's so like financially there's like so much money and interpersonal issues and other stuff and planning that goes into it that when I got married I was like, this is way better, we can just like relax and not be like working towards this big built up thing.
Did you cry the day after your wedding?
I didn't. No.
I did.
You did? You were
yeah.
like so upset it was over?
No, I was so happy it was over.
Okay.
That I was just like, this release. Like, I no longer have to open up a 27 sheet Excel.
Yeah.
Like,
it's over.
I was like organized. Like, this is over. And I just like
the tears. And my husband's like, tears of joy. Wrong? Yeah.
Okay.
My husband was like, my husband's like, what's wrong with you? And I was just like,
I've made a huge mistake.
It's over. We're done. It was like a destination wedding. Like,
oh, so was mine. Where was yours at?
It was in Athens. So it was kind of a destination. Like 200 of the 300 people there lived in Greece.
That's a big wedding for a destination wedding.
It's a small wedding for Greek standards, though. My sister-in-law had 1,000 people at our wedding.
I mean, I should know this from my big fat Greek wedding, which is the only source of...
That's like Toronto. But yeah, no, it's funny. My big fat Greek wedding, too, came out the same year that
I got married.
And I didn't watch it because I was like, I've got enough. I can't
too close to home.
It's too close.
Right.
I don't need the documentary.
I felt that way before. You're like, I need some space from this topic.
Yeah. Yeah. I know. I definitely cried the day after. And I will. Do you think anything changed between you being a girlfriend and fiance to being married? Someone can be in the hospital room when you're dying.
Right. I think my dating anxiety definitely went way down as I became engaged and then married and serious. I think it was I definitely had a lot of dating anxiety, in the beginning of dating, not just him, but everyone. Yeah. I think that was just kind of a topic I was always so anxious about.
Right.
And was overthinking and was very nervous about. And I think there was that little, I think you can sense that in a relationship, but I think once it was we were fully committed, and at every stage you get you feel more safe, you feel more comfortable. I think that went way down. And I think the ironic thing about that is that once you're less anxious, then you almost get better feedback from the person, which feeds into your less anxiety. Whereas if you're more anxious, the person's maybe needs a little more distance from you.
Right.
So it feeds into itself.
Right. You've been oversharing about your fertility issues.
Yeah.
Tell me more about that.
I mean, we've been trying to have a baby for couple years now, had a few miscarriages. We're still working on it.
I'm sorry.
That's okay. I think it's the more I talk about it, I think the more normalized it becomes. And I think it becomes less
it is normal though. Yeah. I think one in four pregnancies are miscarriage.
No, totally. And I think, that what in terms of my marriage, what that's done is you really learn when you go through something together, I think you have a sense of what you're glad that you pick certain qualities in someone. And you've said this before. It's it could be hard to support someone when they're having a bad day, but it's very hard. I think it's another level of a relationship to support someone when they're having a bad year.
Yeah.
Or a bad couple years.
And not even emotionally, biologically.
Yeah.
A whole other layer of, hormones are a real thing.
Oh, totally. Yeah, it's physical, it's emotional. I mean, it's financial, it's everything.
Yeah. Oh yeah, financial.
Yeah, it's a lot of stuff to sort of
and it's not even you into. It's also the other person.
Right. I mean, it's mostly me because it's my he's an important part of the piece, but I think that there is a difference when your physical body is going through it. And for men, it's almost more theoretical.
For men, I think it's almost they're the audience.
Right. Totally.
They're experiencing it, but then
through you,
it's all right, it's over. When's the next showing?
Right. Well, did you feel that way with when, you have kids, when through your pregnancies and things like that?
I will tell you something. I was allergic to my son when I was pregnant with him.
Okay.
I didn't even know that was a possibility.
Actually?
Yeah.
What does that even mean?
When my skin started to stretch, this is whatever I'm about to say. This is so rare that the fact that you know me,
you're not trying to scare anyone.
Okay. You have a higher chance of having triplets than having this happen to you. So when my skin was stretching, instead of my body making cells, because, you have to make skin cells, you've got to make some skin for the growth.
Right.
My body started to take stem cells from my son.
Oh, wow.
He's a boy. So suddenly my skin, I was 23 weeks, which is the earliest case, at least at Columbia Presbyterian. It started to itch, and then suddenly I was purple, a purple eggplant.
Oh, wow.
And I couldn't sleep. I was convulsing from itching, and it was a whole thing. And I had to, my husband would have to wake up every 2 hours to put on steroids, cream on me and like menthol cream on me. And,
okay. But that's nice that he did it.
Yeah. Uh-huh. Right. And I just remember being in despair, and it took 23 days to like get a handle
figure
on
out
it.
What was going on. Right.
Yeah. Do you remember that episode in Friends where they, Phoebe has like the chicken pox and they like, so my husband did that. He put on.
So he wouldn't get like infected.
No, he put it on my hands that I would stop scratching myself. Cause I was like scratching skin off. Like was like,
yeah, it sounds like a, I mean, yeah, that's like your,
straight up allergic.
It's a good test of the relationship.
Oh yeah. And then like, I remember complaining to my doctor about 2 weeks in, like I haven't slept in 14 days. Like I haven't slept. I sleep for 90 minutes. At some point, like your body collapses
right
on itself. And I would sleep for 90 minutes and then I'd wake up. And then it's like the day I had to take off work. It was like a whole thing.
This was just with one of your kids.
With one of my kids. Yeah. And
didn't happen again. Were you scared it was going to happen?
I was terrified.
Again?
The moment they said it was a girl, I was like, okay. Like that's the only time I was just like, and just tell me. I didn't need that. I was just like, just tell me on the phone.
You don't need the big reveal.
I don't even believe in that stuff. So I'm like, oh, it doesn't matter. Like, just tell me what it is. I don't need the surprises. I don't care. Just,
okay, that didn't just happen with because she's a girl.
Yeah, essentially. And it was like, it was just very stressful. And I remember there was a time, that one time the doctor gave me like a sleeping pill just so I could sleep.
Okay.
And I think it was Ambien. Is that a sleeping pill?
Yeah.
And my husband's like, you're never taking this again. I go, why? He goes, you woke up at 2 a.m. and started making eggs in your sleep.
Oh my God,
and I'm like,
remember?
I don't remember any of this.
That's so scary.
Yeah. Anyway. So, but I remember there was a day where he was like putting on the steroids at like 3 a.m. And I was just thinking like, man, I married a good one. That was the moment.
Yeah,
where
it's
I
nice
thought,
to
like,
have those moments when you're like, okay, this is really what it's all
this
about.
This is what it is. This is the team.
It really is, because that's, you know, it's not something you really, a lot of the times when you get married, it's not something you like can know before.
No.
You don't know how someone reacts.
You have no idea.
I mean, that's right. I'm sure you've seen this yourself. You get a lot of COVID relationships. And you're like, I didn't know what you were going to, like, I've never seen you in a global pandemic before. I don't know what your pandemic personality is or how you react to, like,
your work,
anxiety.
Your work voice.
Yeah, either your work voice or, like this unknown, like, how you react in sort of, like, a little bit of a crisis, because it's sort of, like, a worldwide crisis. Like, how are you, how do you deal with, I almost, like, forget because it feels, like, so long ago. But, like, how do you deal with, like, how safe are you, like, compared to me? How, like, you know, how do you deal with my anxiety? I think that you, any kind of, like, negative thing, I feel like, does test a relationship in an interesting way. And it can either bring you closer or sort of set you
did
further
apart.
Did you
feel tested in the pandemic in your relationship?
I think a little bit. Just in, like, again, any unknown situation I think of as a test. And we were living together at the time in a one bedroom apartment where the bedroom wasn't particularly like large enough, I would say, to have like a real office. We were working in the same room and you're literally with someone 24/7. But I do think we were lucky in that it really did. It felt like we came out of the pandemic. I mean, we came out of the pandemic engaged. So it I guess it was a good test.
You said you had a destination wedding?
Yes.
Where was that?
In Mexico.
Where in Mexico?
Mayacoba.
Oh, that's great.
Yeah,
did you? Awesome. I've seen the photos. It looked like a lot of fun.
Thank you. It was a ton of fun. Yeah.
Yeah. Great. And you were a beautiful bride.
Oh, thank you so much.
Do you ever look back at those photos and like be like, oh, you're a baby here. You don't know anything.
About like
life.
About life.
Yeah.
I mean, it was 2 years ago, so I don't feel like I've known that. I necessarily know that much more, but I feel like I've been through some things. Like. It's funny, like, I guess, like, you always, you think you know everything or you think you know how something's going to go and then it doesn't go that way. Mm-hmm. And I think it's, like, you could look at it like a bad thing, like you're unlucky or in certain ways or it's annoying that you have to deal with that. But you can look at it like every sort of trial that you go through, I do think gives you more compassion, more empathy, and, like, makes you understand yourself better and understand other people who have gone through that a lot better, which is like the nice silver lining part of all of it.
What do you think, you know, now, you know, you've just shared that you've gone through multiple miscarriages and I can't even, you know, but what do you think you and, you know, your husband are learning in the process about your marriage going through that sort of?
Yeah, I think we learn like how we want to be supported, like, from each other.
Did you have to communicate that while it was happening?
Oh, totally. I think there's, because, like, a lot of the times you're not really sure, and it's no one's fault if you're not really sure, but sometimes you expect someone to react in a certain way, and sometimes you're, like, the way someone wants someone to react is different one time than it is a different time. Like one day I might want you to just like listen to me like scream, and another day I might want to just be like held. Like I think it's like it can, and you can get angry if someone isn't responding how you want them to respond, but they don't really know that unless you communicate it. And I think that was kind of like one of the best things that we figured out, is it's kind of like, well, what do you need from me?
Does he ask you that, or do you tell him now? Like,
I think it's both ways. Like it depends, you know, what mood I'm in, but, right. Sometimes it's like, well, like do you want me just to listen? Do you want me to like, do you want like your handheld? Do you want me to call your friend and tell her to come by? Like,
ooh, that's a good one.
Yeah. I think there's a lot of different ways to support people, and not everyone wants to be supported the same way. So I think communication in that is definitely like a big thing. And sometimes it takes a couple fights to like,
to learn that, to figure that out.
Yeah.
When you fight, what do you do?
What do I do?
Like, do you think you fight fairly?
Now I think we do.
What conversations did you have?
To fight fairly?
Yeah.
I think it's more like knowing each other and knowing like how to speak to each other that creates the fighting fairly. I think that like, sometimes there's like, I need a minute, because like I'm getting really annoyed, and it's usually me. I'm like, I'm gonna need a minute. I'm getting really annoyed. Like, I'm gonna go take a walk. I take a walk, I come back, and then I'm able to like, once you have like a little space from it, I'm able to like verbalize what I'm feeling and what I'd like differently.
And like a safe word or anything like that?
No safe word. No
safe word. We have a safe phrase. It comes from a porno.
What is it?
Simple as this.
Simple as this. And that means what?
We need a pause.
You need a break.
But take a break. Okay. 15 minutes.
I mean, you're always a better version of yourself 15 minutes after, I think.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. You just come back apologizing.
Right.
Like, let's just try this one more time.
Exactly.
My husband believes that we should never go to bed fighting. Mm-hmm. And I agree with him, I guess, sometimes. Sometimes I just want to be angry.
Yeah.
But as a result, I could think of, in one hand, I think there's like three fights where it's like we stayed up until 4 a.m, 6 a.m. Like no one's going to sleep.
Right.
We're figuring this out because you said you don't want to go to bed.
Right.
Angry.
Careful what you wish for.
Now we're going to be up, and you know that up is not us fighting for 4 hours. It's taking breaks every 20 minutes.
Right. Gather your thoughts.
And come back. Fight a little more. Yeah. 5 minutes. Okay.
Right.
Back to your corners.
Because we don't need to say everything we think the minute we think it.
No.
I think that's a sort of myth in a relationship. Like you can be able to express yourself, but you don't have to express yourself in that moment exactly the way that your like lizard brain wants you to.
One of the things that I learned in communicating with my husband is that when he is experiencing high anxiety, he needs a visual.
Okay.
So for instance,
like
we were fighting over like how much house we can afford. This was before the interest rates became what they are now. Back when the interest rates were 3%.
Oh, wow. Back in the day. Yeah.
Huh?
Back in the glory days.
Back in the glory days when there was no houses, but 3% inventory, 3%, you know, interest rates. I was like, you're saying we can afford this much house, and I'm saying we can afford this much house. And it wasn't that different, but his idea, he kept going back. Like he would say, we can afford this much.
Mm-hmm.
I'm like, okay, great. I'm in with you. But then when it's time to like close, he's like, no, we can't. And I'm like, hold on.
Like,
how much do you think we make? And then I had to show him, like I made a PowerPoint presentation.
Right. Yeah.
And I was like, this is how much money we have at the end of the month. This is how much money we have in our savings. This is how much money we have in our housing. Like showing them like the mathematical formula, yeah. Showing them like, here's other backups. Here's this. If you lost your job, we have this many months.
Save,
like, you know, showing them what life looks like if we have, and that helped a lot.
I think men, like, are definitely understand things better that way. When it's like,
I think
they have a very, like, logical brain, and, like, that helps them make decisions more than anything theoretical, where I think women are maybe a little bit better at that.
Maybe. I know I think faster than him, but that's because he looks at all the variables, and I'm just like, oh, God, let's just get to the end. Like, I can't.
Right, well, that's what I'm saying. It's like they're like evidence-based,
yeah.
Like X plus, like 1 + 2 = 3.
Yeah.
And I think we're more like, well, let's
it's 3.
Examine. Right. And let's examine like why we think, why is it 1? Why is it, why is right. The other one 1?
Right.
And like what does it look like to have 3? And I think they're more just like straightforward.
What does it look like to have 3? That's where
right.
I'm at. I'm like, come on, let's.
Exactly.
Let's get there.
Yeah.
Like, I'm already here. Let's.
Catch up.
Yeah. And no, he's like, I had to do that. So I learned that. And that was great. That I feel like helped a lot in our marriage. That, and also like, did your husband, what's your husband's name?
Mike.
That's right. Did Mike, did he work from home?
During the pandemic?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Did you? Or were you going to the Betches office?
We like, in the beginning, obviously, when everyone was home, we were both home. Eventually, we both started going in. He goes in more than I do.
Okay. My husband was home for, I think, 2 months, and then he was just back in the office.
Okay.
Because he works in a lab.
Oh, okay. They're like separate from each other. Yeah.
But I had to tell him, like, you can't be in my office. Like, this isn't working for me.
Okay.
Like, you're taking up, like, I can't. Yeah. Like, I'm trying to run a whole business here.
That's what I'm saying. You learn communication when you kind of have to.
Yeah. And then the other thing that we learned, we had our second kid. Couldn't catch a break here. We had our second kid in May 2020.
Oh, wow.
And watching my husband try to protect me in the first 2 months. Because, you know, oh, pregnant woman.
Right.
You know, I remember I was walking the dog and this other guy just passed me, but like from 3 feet away. Like, okay. I was on the sidewalk and he was on the road.
Right.
And my husband had like a meltdown. He's like, you have COVID now.
Oh, wow.
And I'm like, what? How? And I started crying. I was like, he was like, you need to be more careful. I'm like, what are you talking about? I'm on the sidewalk. I'm being the normal one. They need to be more careful.
Right.
You should be wearing a mask. And I'm like, oh my God. Like, I was just freaking out. I think he's just trying to, I think we're all just trying to manage.
Figure it out. Yeah.
Yeah. It's just a lot of variables. Yeah. This is back in March 2020.
Right.
And I was, you know, 7 months pregnant.
Yeah. I mean, it's a scary time for everyone. It's kind of what I'm saying. You get to find out what people are like in like this kind of like high intensity panicked situation.
I felt more panicked because my husband works in public health. And I was like, oh, I was convinced he knows more. He does know more than I do.
Right. So you kind of felt like, okay, I should take my cues on how anxious to be from him.
Yeah.
Was he anxious?
He was so anxious. Right. Chlorine on the...
Yeah, well, that's the thing about moods. The thing about COVID, I think, is like you get everyone's mood. You get every, like, and not only, because that in any regular household, like someone else's mood, if someone's in a bad mood chronically, like that does affect your relationship, that does affect like your household. But in this situation, the person's in a mood, but they're also living with you
right
in the next room. So it's like that on steroids.
It was crazy. And it's because of the social design of relationships had completely shifted and still shifted. But one of the things that we did to like give ourselves some grace, and it took us a couple months to get there, was like, okay, you need an hour break from this, and so do I. Mm-hmm. So we started scheduling when he was working from home. 90 minutes, you get to leave the house, drive, I don't care, or you get to go into the bedroom. It's your room.
Okay.
No one's talking to you. The house can burn down. I'm not going to bother you.
That's good.
I get the same in return.
Right. Because that's because that could be like a thing. If you're not comfortable enough with each other, that can be a weird thing to ask for. Totally. You have to be on a comfort level to be able to state your needs. Like, that's when you know you're like truly... like have a comfort with each other, when you can just say what you need and not feel judged or not feel right. scared of offending the person. Like, that's when you can really be yourself. Say, this is what I need. It's not about you. It's not personal.
Yeah. And that's what we did. And we still do that.
It's great.
I don't know if it's 90 minutes. I think it's like an hour, but even on the weekends, I'm like, that's your hour.
Yeah. I mean, especially when you have kids, I'm sure, because it's like, there's a lot of co-responsibilities there.
Yeah. Yeah. And I feel like I have a partner who is, this is a very equitable relationship.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I don't have, like, there's no primary parent. There's right. no default
That's
parent.
That's great. I think not that many women say that.
You know what, though? It's funny. It's like, socially, like, mm-hmm. you have to tell people. Like, my kids' daycare, mm-hmm. they only had one email. And I was like, can you put my husband on the emails, too?
Right.
Like, yeah. I want him to get the emails about the Valentine's Day party, not just me, so that we're both, like, I'll get
them. Yeah, if maybe more people did that, then it would feel like more equal throughout more households, when maybe. It's not, because like society is kind of telling
men. But you have to
men,
like ask for it.
So I'm saying society is telling men that you're the primary parent too. So like,
yeah.
And it sounds like you have a relatively unique situation, because most what I hear from my friends with kids is that it's not super even.
No, but I think it's also, I'm also caring for a disabled parent. So my husband also knows that I'm not available certain times of the day.
Right. So you have a more
too.
Unique situation.
Yeah.
Right.
But I don't know if it would be different. I don't know. It just depends on, every couple's different, but you know what? It's like my mom.
Mm-hmm.
I think about my mom all the time, like how she was like the primary parent, the default parent.
Okay.
And everything. And but I also am like, well, did she ask my dad?
Right. Yeah, I mean, that's what we like, circle back what we were just talking about, like communicating what your needs are.
Right.
Is sort of like, maybe she didn't want it, him to be more involved, or maybe she did and she just didn't know how to ask for it.
Right. And I think that's what it is. It's like some of us don't know how to ask for it, but I don't know. Right. You practice. So tell me a little bit more now, oversharing, when you decided to talk about your fertility journey, I've seen like the episodes. Mm-hmm. And it sounds like, you know, you're trying to get like a full comprehensive picture.
Yeah.
For anyone who's also experiencing this.
Totally. Because I think you see a lot of, for me, I kind of base most of my content based on like what I see is missing from the content that's already out there, or what I feel like I would like from the internet or from, you know, media that I'm consuming that I can't get anywhere. So for me, it was like the only things that I had seen on Instagram or online or anywhere were really like success stories. People, you know, they announce sometimes, like you see, like you always see the birth announcements. Sometimes they write when they have the baby, like what it like took. But it's always like a very high level summary, and it makes it sound like
you see the highlight easy. Reel. Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. Or even if like even if they say the struggles, it seems like a pretty like straightforward thing that they've gotten. So I wanted like the full story. I wanted like the, when did you even think about starting kids? Take me on like the full journey, because that's usually like the to me, the beauty is in like the details of these things. And I think the more details you get, the more clear it is that it's not so straight. It's not so linear, or it's not so, there's like so many ups and downs when it comes to this kind of thing, and like successes and failures. It's really an emotional roller coaster. But also just like the different ways that people become parents and have families, and there's so many other like non-traditional ways that people become parents that aren't really talked about or seen that much, which is why I love Baby Steps. You know, we have gay single dads, we have single moms, we have people who would use surrogates, had multiple IVF retrieval failures, transfer failures, people, secondary infertility. Like there's just like,
what's secondary infertility?
Secondary infertility is when you had your first child, like, I guess it relatively easily. And then like, you're having trouble conceiving a second child.
Got it. Yeah. Wow. I didn't know there's a separate name for that.
Yeah. I guess. Cause like that's its own thing. Cause it's like, you don't necessarily expect that, cause you had your first kid, and like, it's, right. So I think it's probably a different mental game to go through,
right.
From not having any versus like having one and wanting to grow your family.
Do you, how is Mike supportive of this?
Oh, he's
the
best.
You're putting out the, you know, you're talking about your personal life, right?
Yeah. And I mean, that's like, I mean, one of the greatest things about our partnership is like, he's so secure and so like cool. And I would say proud of me for everything that I do in that space. And, you know, if there's ever anything that I feel like is personal, or that he might, I mean, I ran this podcast idea by him, I would never like expose stuff about, even if I'm talking about a fight we have,
right?
I'll always say, like, you know, I was thinking, and it's always like after we've sort of resolved it or put it together, and I'll be like, do you think, like, I think this would be a good episode to talk about what happened there, are you okay with it? And he usually is. Very rarely is he like, no, don't tell anyone that. That's our personal business.
Do you get emails from people now who are listening to Baby Steps?
Oh, yeah. I mean, that's the best part, is people who feel like that this helped them feel not alone, or this helped them articulate what they were feeling about the whole experience, or this helped them like learn more, honestly, about different methods to fertility, or different things that worked for different people, or different, or just made them feel like they could be a single mom on their own if they wanted to.
Yeah.
And that was normalized. I think there's just like, there's so much around this traditional path that people feel like it can feel like a little embarrassing, I think, for a lot of people when you can't have kids. Cause it's like, I can't do the thing that everyone else is doing. I'm like failing. And I think the more you see about other people in pop culture, in real life, on the internet, of those stories, the more it becomes like, okay, this is a part of life that a lot of people go through.
And they're just not talking about it.
Exactly.
But you're giving that platform to talk about it.
Yeah, I mean, that's what I'm trying. That's another thing that I'm trying to do. And also just for myself, I like hearing other people's stories. Like when I went through my first miscarriage, I didn't have any friends who had had one before. So that felt like especially like isolating and lonely. And then my therapist had recommended that I DM like a couple people that on Instagram that had either like were public about it or that I heard through a friend had it. And I'm not really like a big reacher outer. I'm kind of like introverted. I don't really like to do that. But I did that and I heard these stories of like their full stories and I just felt like a lot better. I just felt like, okay, like it's not just me. I feel less like lonely. So that's what I wanted to do for like more people.
I love that. Like right now you just launched American Fever Dream, which is politically focused.
Right.
And that's really exciting. And you have, who are the guests, the hosts again?
Amanda Duberman.
Yeah.
And V, Under the Desk News, she has a,
she's incredible. I'm sorry.
I think,
are they different? Are they that?
Yeah.
Sorry.
Let's do that.
Let's X that out. Yeah. Okay. All right. Let me start from American Fever Dream. Okay. So one of the things that I've always admired about you is the variety of content that you have at Betches. So you obviously have oversharing with Baby Steps as part of that.
Yes.
You have You Up, and now it's following Jared's dating journey.
Yes.
and now you have American Fever Dream.
Yes, American Fever Dream. We just launched. We're so excited about it. It's hosted by Amanda Duberman, who runs our news and politics vertical. And V, who's the, they run Under the Desk News, such amazing content. We're so excited to have them together. So talented, funny, informative. It's like the perfect place to get the news.
I love it. And especially at a time when I feel like there is a lot less access to certain things.
Yes.
Like, I don't think I've ever hit subscribe faster.
I love it.
I was just like, yeah. I saw the little reel that you put up and I was like, subscribe.
Yeah. Boom. I mean, that's really what we try to do at Betches. We try to take heavy topics like the news, obviously, even fertility, dating, motherhood. We try to take these topics, which can feel very heavy to a lot of people, and just make them like laugh at them a little bit. And even Baby Steps, which is, you know, a very serious topic, a lot of very sensitive topic. I don't believe that there's any topic that we can't find a way to laugh about in some way, shape or form, because I think that's the only way to get through things.
It's the only way to get through life.
Exactly. So like that's what we're doing with American Fever Dream. That's what we do with pretty much all of our platforms. We want to take the heaviness of life, make it more digestible, make it so that people can use it to connect with each other, and make it so we can still laugh.
I've been following both creators that are going to be hosting American Fever Dream for a while.
Okay.
And I remember thinking like, oh, there's going to be someone who says that this is going to be liberal leaning. But I don't think a lot of things are liberal leaning. I think this might be biased in me saying this, but I think there's certain things that like, here's the reality.
Right.
And here's the not reality.
Well, we like to say like, it's liberal leaning, but in the sense that like we're promoting like
social equity.
Yeah. Social equity and like women's rights. Right.
Yeah.
But we're not.
Somehow that's liberal.
But, yeah. So okay. I'm saying like, I think that we just think like we see it as we're promoting like a stance on just like general, like, and we were talking to someone, I forget who it was in London. And it's kind of like, their content is not necessary. Like they don't think of their content as political, but they talk about the same things as us because there it's just like common sense. Like, oh, like healthcare for everyone is just, it's not like, that's not political. Like only here is it political.
Right.
So it's very interesting. That's like a very interesting point.
I find right now that so I'm in the process of thinking about like, I was explaining to you before, I was like, I'm looking at how elder care is affecting dating and it's affecting the housing market. It's affecting a lot because we are at a generation where our parents are older.
Right.
And where it's also coinciding at the time when a lot of us are having children or raising children.
Right.
And a career is going to get affected by this. And it's also very expensive to have elder care. And it's like, okay, what's the next thing here? It's like, oh yeah, you know, well, who's going to help? And just this suggestion of like, who's going to help? I remember saying this to one of my mother's friends. And her response to me saying that I'm struggling, mm-hmm. was, well, maybe your parents should have planned better for this.
Oh, wow.
And I was like, I don't think my parents thought that it would cost $8,000 to $12,000 a month in a facility.
Right. I mean, you'd like to
be taken care of.
You'd like to believe that you live in a society where, like, you know, people don't have to worry about that, or like where that's not a huge drain on all of your resources.
And it was like crazy because when I went to ask for help, like I just needed help. Like, help me just figure out this. Help me. I don't know how to take my mom to dialysis every other day.
Right.
I don't know how to do that. Yeah. I still had not, now I do, but it's been 3 years. But like,
there's no resources. Like, yeah. there's no societal.
Do you know what suggested to me? They're like, well, get her on Medicaid. I go, how do I get her on Medicaid? Well, you got to bankrupt her and also sign the house over to the government or whatever.
Right.
So that when your both parents die, they have that. And I'm like, what? That's how people get Medicaid?
Yeah.
Like, that's crazy. I'm not doing that.
I mean, I didn't even know that, but. There's so many things.
So now I'm uncovering. I'm ready to bring in more guests. This might become a new tangent to this podcast, to be honest.
We'll have to have the American Fever Dream crew on here too.
It's a lot. And I think that's what I'm saying. Yes. And also, but that's what I'm saying is like, you see this situation where it's like, why isn't anybody talking about this?
Mm-hmm.
How come? I don't know. I feel like there's not a lot of support, and you have podcasts like yours where, especially, I can't wait to hear American Fever Dream, but also even Baby Steps. It's like, look, this is what our generation is experiencing.
Oh, totally. And I mean, if you talk about like money and resources and things like that, there's a huge gap in like in equity in terms of fertility treatments and who gets access to them. And, you know, IVF is something that's off limits to so many people. I feel like very lucky that's something that I can afford. My husband has great insurance, but like, it's the kind of thing, like exactly like you said, that we're just talking about the emotions of it. There's so much that goes into it financially
if you look even at you up, right? If you look at your titles, the episode titles from the last, was it 7 years? How long have you guys had them?
6 years.
6 years. Yeah. Start from the beginning and look at last week's. Look at how much dating has evolved.
Right.
In that 6 year period.
Yeah.
Just from the titles alone. It's crazy. Forget the content that you're talking about. And like, for instance, the word ick, that didn't exist 6 years ago.
No, it's not.
Right?
Yeah. Like, it used to just be called a turnoff in our day. Yeah.
But now people are so quick. And actually, a turnoff, it was harder to get. Now I feel like people just throw icks over anything.
Right. Because like, it's like, because the idea of it is that it's so petty, I guess.
If you ick, though, all over, you're never going to get into a relationship.
Oh, totally. Totally. Right? Yeah.
And so I think that's what. I think, like, I look at it from a perspective of, like, how this is a struggle.
I mean, the icks make sense in the context to me of dating apps, right?
Mm-hmm.
Because if the next best person is one swipe away, then I can be icked out by anything.
Yeah.
Like, you're as choosy as your options a lot of the times.
Right.
And so, you know, I think we've come a long way from being in a village and there's, like, five single guys in the village and, like, you're one of five single girls and
you probably had a similar lifestyle and moral compass. Yeah.
And you can't be that icked out because like there's an endless array of people that are there. So you kind of, which is a good thing, I think, because you have to see people for what's important. You have to figure out values that are actually important to you. See, not get hung up on like the tiny superficial things.
So where do you see now Betches going after this? Are we going, are we becoming a network? Like CNN? Like,
yeah, I think we're definitely doubling down on our entertainment. We produced Jared's Netflix special
last
year, which was awesome.
I saw it in Greece.
Yeah.
And with like Greek subtitles.
We're really, that's so funny.
I was like, these jokes.
Did they land as well in Greek?
My cousins were like,
didn't get it.
They don't understand. Like, I think I forget which bit it was, but like, that's why. And I'm like, oh, it's an American thing.
Right. A lot of Jewish humor too.
Yeah.
That's funny. Yeah.
They're like, why the popped collars or whatever?
Right. What does that mean?
What does that mean? Yeah. I'm like, it's just American. Like, I'm sorry. We don't have the same fashion as Europe. Excuse me.
That's so funny.
Yeah. But no, it was really good. It was great. And you produced that.
Yeah, we produced that. We're looking to just like bring the Betches signature snark, the Betches, ethos, like, to so many different touch points in women's lives, so that there's, you know, I think there's already so many places to interact with us no matter what phase of life you're in, and we'd like, you know, we just want to bring levity to anything heavy, to anything going on, and just continue making people laugh.
I love that. Jordana, on that note, I think this is a really great place to end. I just want to say that it is wonderful having you on. Wonderful talking about baby steps.
Thank you so much for having me. This was such a great conversation. If you guys want to listen to Baby Steps, it's on the Oversharing podcast feed. So you can look for Oversharing. Also, you can listen to Oversharing. We talk about all sorts of interpersonal dilemmas, not just fertility stuff. We talk about problems with your mother-in-law, problems with your friends, problems with your coworkers. You know, we've got the whole gamut there. And obviously, You Up for dating content.
Absolutely. This podcast is a big fan of You Up.
Yes, we're a big fan of you. I mean, like, I love that you tell it straight. You're no bullshit, I think. I don't know if you
used no, I appreciate first, you saying that. Yeah, it's been a week.
It's refreshing in a world full of vagueness.
Yes. Thank you, Jordana. If you want to follow Jordana, show notes, links to her Instagram and her socials and Oversharing and all that jazz. Thanks again.
Thank you for having me. This was great.
And thank you, dear listener or viewer. You can watch this on YouTube. Help me with the algorithm gods and comment and tell us how much you loved Jordana on this week's episode. And of course, be lovable, but more importantly, be likable. See you next week.
For the ones who get it done, the most important part is the one you need now. And the best partner is the one who can deliver. That's why millions of maintenance and repair pros trust Grainger. Because we have professional-grade supplies for every industry, even hard-to-find products. And we have same-day pickup and next-day delivery on most orders. But most importantly, we have an unwavering commitment to help keep you up and running. Call, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.